Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 11th episode of the HRVC Cast, hosted by yours truly, Daniel Song at DSongVC on Twitter. This week's special guests are Anush and Nitin from Startup O. Startup O is a Singapore-based venture builder that aims to connect startups to seed funding through the fund and get them in touch with the network investors and market experts. It puts businesses through a 10-week process that involves a detailed look into their business, advice, and evaluation. So please join me in welcoming Anush and Nitin from Startup O. Hey, Anush and Nitin, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, hi, Daniel. Great to be on your show. Yeah.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for having us.
Great. So this is the first time where we have the two guests on at the same time. So let's give this a try. But why don't we start by telling our audience a little bit about yourselves and your story on how you came to found Startup O.
Absolutely. I'll go first, Daniel. My name is Anuj and I'm the co-founder, along with Nitin, of Startup O. A large part of my career was with FMCG, MNCs, and in commercial roles in mostly sales and marketing. Worked with companies like Procter & Gamble, GlaxoSmithKline, Beecham, and helped set up one of the first ISPs in India during the dot-com boom. But with its bust, it landed me in Singapore in 2001 end. Got involved with marketing consulting and services company, which was consulting to companies like Visa. But again, got hit hard by SARS and went back to the corporate world. I was very fortunate to be in a very entrepreneurial French-American MNC, which was establishing itself into Asia at that time. The name of the company is BIC. And for the 9 years I was with them, we started from scratch almost in Asia and established operations in 13 countries, grew the brand and distribution to 55,000 outlets. And that kind of gave me a lot of go-to-market sort of experience in this very fragmented and dynamic landscape. Came to a red pill, blue pill moment in late 2012, where I moved and decided to move from the world of pipelines to platform, where I founded a startup and invented a product, failed at one and shelved the other, realized, and it still remains with me, the pain and the process of forming a company and of a founder, even if you're a corporate honcho, is not easy. And I think that kind of sowed the seeds of creating something which kind of helped the whole ecosystem of investors and founders. But, you know, in gratitude with certain VCs like Jungle Ventures who invited me to help some of the seed level companies that they invested in to scale in Asia. Got involved in scaling a company for, you know, in F&B SaaS space. It was an interesting journey. Gave me a lot of insights on the pain and the process again of scaling across different geographies. The company got Series B, was an interesting experience there. But also to mention, Red Dot Ventures, who got me involved in teaching through a boot camp for startup founders. Ended up teaching 160 founders over 2.5 years, where that allowed me to experience as an investor, as mentor, as a trainer, as also scaling companies. So this combination of preaching and practicing over weekend and weekdays gave a lot of insights into the ecosystem, which is rather bountiful, but very inefficient, especially in a geography like Southeast Asia. And when this vision was formed of creating something which, you know, enables founders as well as provide investors a solid ground to participate in this ecosystem, I met Nitin, and then the magic happened in terms of its execution to the next level. So I leave it to Nitin to introduce himself.
Thanks, Anuj. And Daniel, I spent a long career with a large European investment bank across London, Hong Kong, Singapore, and India. But back in 2010, me and a few ex-colleagues found ourselves becoming principal investors, and we were specifically focusing on financial services companies in the region. And when we realized the advantages that modern technology had was being able to impart to the operations of these companies, naturally developed an interest in fintech companies, became an angel investor in fintech companies. And within a couple of years, I found myself running a large angel portfolio, which wasn't really doing much for me. It was taking up a lot of my time, and a lot of the results in terms of investment returns were being a bit spotty. So I was beginning to understand the pain that is felt by a few of the angel investors in the region, especially when it comes to being able to track the success of their startups and be able to be there at critical junctures in their evolution. So when Anuj mentioned this platform approach that could help both startups and investors become a little more efficient about how they did their how they went about their business, that was quite exciting for me.
Great. So Anuj, what pain points did you identify that motivated you to create this platform? And how are you going about to solve these challenges through Startup O?
Well, I think if you really look at it, there are broadly four key constituents of this whole ecosystem. Of course, the first one being startup founders themselves, whose journey remained quite challenging, despite a lot of evolution that has happened in the last 5 years, as I see that. They spend 80% of their time going from random meetings and networking events in the surge of a white night. And for many of them, instead of focus should be on the product development or customer development, it remains raising fund becomes a metric itself. And that's quite sad, because this is not where founders should spend a disproportionate amount of their time. Also, it takes a lot of wasted time in terms of understanding and maneuvering the ecosystem, especially it's a fragmented one across South and Southeast Asia. So flying, meeting, one-on-one, and these kind of things incur a lot of opportunity costs in terms of time wasted for a lot of founders. The second constituents being the investors on the other side of the fence. They are suffering a lot because of the opacity of information in this space, subjectivity, which is totally decisions are, you know, largely made on I feel, you feel, and many a times in different network groups that they're part of, it is blind leading blind kind of a situation. Now, there's a very common myth that 90% of the money that you're going to invest in this space is going to be wasted, and you wait for that one big hope or some unicorn sort of a situation, which reduces to make a very random gambling and upon chance sort of a asset allocation. And we do not agree with that. And we have seen there's a lot of data to support the fact that there could be a scientific approach. So we are solving that aspect. But investors suffer a lot as well in this space. The third constituents are people who are tech entrepreneurs. They're tech evangelists. They're people who are enthusiasts and they want to be mentors. They are experts in some form or shape because they build organizations. But they are limited with their burnout that happens by participating through demo days, going physically, traveling various places. And, you know, after a while, it just takes a toll on them. And there is no honest way, frankly, to participate in a way that they can identify promising startups and become part of their journeys. This is the pain I have personally felt after mentoring and investing in many startups. And finally, the whole ecosystem, if you really look at it, accelerators, incubators, crowdfunding platform, angel clubs, they all remain very, very siloed and physical because of the nature of the geography itself. So there's a larger need of collaboration that always, I think, is out there. And many well-intended people, they're trying a lot, but because of the nature of the geography itself, it slows everybody down. So how at Startup O, we have created a platform fund approach, which is location agnostic, allowing a lot of collaboration with different kind of partners who are involved in this ecosystem, providing us very good quality sourcing at one end. But at the other end, it enables a lot of founders to just with a click of button, participate and prove themselves to a global group of experts who also participate to get into the assessment of these startups and participate in their journey onwards on building the ventures. And we have the whole model, how it kind of functions. At this juncture, very happy to say that we have more than 700 startups across 40 countries who are part of our platform. And we have 66 global experts growing at the rate of 5 to 7, handpicked by references every quarter. So this is a very beautiful community. And what we call it is an ecosystem on cloud that we've been able to create and which is growing fast.
Gotcha. And with years of experience under your belt, I want to pick your brain on the subject of early stage investing. So, Anitin, how would you approach the, you know, what's the right level of ownership at these angel and seed rounds? And one of the biggest questions that startup founders ask is how much do they need to raise in the beginning to sustain their business? So what advice could you give them in terms of dilution as well as the amount to raise for?
Actually, this is a very topical and pertinent question, Daniel, because, you know, nowadays we also get to see a lot of companies being offered sometimes more money than they ask for by VCs that are very keen to get their capital deployed fast. So yes, you're absolutely right. There is an optimal amount. We tend to, you know, after having seen hundreds of companies, we tend to have some quantitative metrics that are emerging from the data. But simply put, we try to look at it much more in revenue terms. So if you're pre-revenue, you need as much money that you can raise to get to the early revenues. And it's a sprint, right? The fact that you're sprinting doesn't actually change much, even if you are in early revenues, because then the next sprint becomes to break even. And finally, even if you do get some sort of repeatable earnings, you're still sprinting to try and get market share. So the distance of these three different sprints tends to vary between, you know, $500,000 at the early stage, all the way to $5 million at the later stage. The good news, of course, is that the costs of doing this are falling every year. And the sharing economy, cloud computing, co-working spaces, etc., are making it easier and easier for companies to achieve this. And then the other trend that Anuj also mentioned is that we also have many more mid-career startups starting out, which means that they're far more ownership focused. And, maintaining dilution, it becomes a little easier for them given these lower costs of being able to achieve these revenue goals.
And I would like to add that a lot of time in Asia, because there is, still the learnings of this whole tech cycle is not completely sunk in among investors mostly. And the mentality or the money sometimes, which is lying with the investors, is made in very traditional models. What happens and what we see across Southeast Asia is they have a tendency to control the founder who seems to be in the need of money. So we see a lot of times a dilution of 30 to 40% of the startup for at the angel round itself. When angels don't have this understanding that if you don't leave enough for the founder's motivation and for further rounds for VCs to take the company to its fruition, then they're doing a disservice to the founders by having this sort of a mentality that it's my company and I'm providing money at this juncture. So I think angel, high net worth individuals, education and awareness in the ecosystem is equally important at this juncture.
Right. And I completely agree with you there, Anuj. Whenever we come across a very good company that's very promising and we kind of take a look at the cap table and see how much dilution that we're giving up in the angel round, the very early stage round, you know, it makes for us, even as an early stage investor, to come in and, you know, even dilute even more of the founders. The worry that we have is, you know, say the founder is left with less than 30%. Is that person going to have the willingness to go through the whole process, which takes many years? And there's going to be more funding that's going to be needed, which will even dilute even more share. So I think that's something that a lot of early stage founders, they need to be very careful about. So I want to turn the table here now, looking for more as from the investor perspective. Do you have a specific methodology to identify the best startups and the best sectors? And maybe you could go in detail about what's involved in this methodology.
Nathan, you want to go ahead?
Sure. So for us, Daniel, there are two main pillars of this methodology. One of them is bias elimination, and the other is cross comparability. So we actually are sector agnostic when we run our assessments. We actually have the ability, as a result of having this large pool of qualified experts, to be able to match the right expert for the right startup, depending on the domain, the country, the stage, and the industry. But one of the things that we struggle with at the early stage, as I'm sure you do too, is that the amount of information that any startup is able to provide really doesn't have too much bearing on, you know, eventual outcomes. So as a result, you know, at early stage, there's a lot of bias involved when you sort of try to look at companies, especially in large volumes. Some people are very enamored by management team qualities. Some people like defensibility of technology. Some people like addressable market sizes to be very large, and so on. So, you know, what we do systematically is actually capture, using a preference survey, the embedded preferences of our experts. And we use that after all the results are in to eliminate bias. That's a very big part of our methodology. The second thing that we do, as I mentioned, is, you know, we own a data framework which helps us cross-compare companies across these various parameters, across years in existence, and across, you know, the addressable market sizes and other parameters like that. So what we feel very comfortable about is the fact that at the end of our 10-week process, we can create an unbiased ranking of companies. And this is something that then, you know, allows us to create portfolio selection based on, you know, much softer factors, like soft and hard factors, like, you know, physical meetings and legal and technical due diligences.
And just to add to that, Daniel, and, you know, investors are now waking up to this sort of a data-driven and transparent approach, which if you really look at it early stage, neither much of the data is available nor much of transparency is there. So what our methodology, the core pillars, you know, the bias elimination and other, provides based on the data that we capture after qualitative interactions, and also providing this whole transparency for people to understand where the startups have come from, what kind of stages they've gone through, which experts have got involved, and what assessments have happened before decision-making algorithms have ranked the whole cohort in a very, very unbiased and structured manner after a rigorous selection and assessment process. So this is, I think, first of its kind in that scenario. Now, from investor, what investors love is that it's a very high due diligence, because we have collaboration with a lot of partners across South, Southeast Asia. So there is first level of curation happening in the local markets. When the promising ones are recommended for our program, then they go through this 10-week online assessment, which is time efficient, but still it's very rigorous. We capture 276 data points in the whole process. And when the algorithms rank them, we invest in the top 3 to 5. But there are a lot of, apart from our captive fund, other funds and corporates are loving it to come in and actually help other companies, or let's say just top 10 to 15 companies, to build their diversified portfolio, which is created, you know, through the platform fund approach.
Gotcha. And, you know, talking about Southeast Asia, I think especially it's much more needed in terms to have a more of a transparency and processes, since it's such in the early, you know, not as mature as compared to, you know, other markets such as US or Europe. Now, the question I had about Southeast Asia that I've noticed since I've joined this you know, VC world as well, is one hurdle preventing some companies from growth is the ability to attain later rounds of funding. So why is raising Series B or C so much tougher in Southeast Asia compared to other regions?
So, Daniel, I think there are multiple factors at work here. And I do feel that this particular situation is getting better over time. But one of the factors, in my view, could be the fact that, you know, there simply isn't enough time history to create the kind of track record that, you know, would have led to large funds that have experience in Series B investing so far. But of course, one of the other trends that has very recently emerged, as you may also be aware of, is that corporate, large technology corporates and corporate venture funds have also become quite active and are being able to participate in the space at sizable investment sizes. So, you know, with an outlook for the next couple of years, we do actually feel that there's a fair amount of liquidity brewing at the Series B level. And, you know, the companies that are coming into our portfolio, one of the important parameters we need to also sort of look at when we try to venture build them is that their revenue growth rates start matching the requirements of the Series B market, both in terms of scale and in terms of speed. And that requires us to sort of, you know, understand how to regionalize and create very rapid scaling of early revenues in our portfolio companies.
For sure, I definitely agree. And, you know, that's what makes Southeast Asia so appealing as well. Of course, there's the demographics of growth and so much happening within the region, but also it's still early where, you know, a lot of different influences can really structure what's expected to be the next huge market globally. And I think one thing we all agree, and everyone and most of the people in this region, is that everyone's super excited about Southeast Asia. And as a result, we're seeing a massive rise of seed funding available in Southeast Asia. We briefly talk about the little later stage where it's a little bit more difficult and where the market needs to be a little bit more mature for it to kind of start coming in from the later stage. But compared to the seaside, we're still seeing a massive rise. And now, that what does that mean, right? The entrepreneur now has more options to kind of go about and select where they want to get the funding from. So how should an entrepreneur evaluate how value-added a VC can be? And are there any signs that one VC has more value add than the another, as say you're coming from the first time entrepreneur's perspective?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. I think there is a clear distinction at this stage that's probably worth making between the nature of the startup in the first place, because as we all aware, nowadays a lot of startups are also being launched by people with significant prior work experience and a fair amount of personal savings to be able to help a company in its early stages. And that's in contrast to the traditional impression that people have about college dropouts and deep technology PhDs trying to set up companies, where a lot of capital as well as soft mentoring was needed in the early stages. Certainly, to the extent that traditional approaches at VC at the VC level with governance introduction and structure definition in an organization, as well as, of course, lots of capital that would then help create foundations for a much bigger business are concerned, there is a place for that. But what we see is that for at least the segment that is nowadays very well aware of their niche, the pain points in the market that they're trying to solve, they do have prior work experience, it's all really about being able to get real traction. And in that respect, we find that approaches which allow for rapid business development, partnership and JV formation with regional partners to be able to capture market opportunities in a rapid way, bring much more tangible support in terms of introductions to talent, team, co-founders, that tends to be way more important for eventual market success than the soft stuff and just capital.
And I guess entrepreneurs have to educate themselves and surround themselves with the right advisors. That's another art and science of the whole thing. But to understand what's the dumb capital and what's the strategic capital. I mean, we've heard this before, but frankly speaking, more and more we are meeting some of the founders of the nature that Nitin has just explained are gravitating towards people who can help them build ventures apart from just giving capital. And I think this is going to be more and more this theme.
Wow, guys, thank you so much. That was like a early stage investment 101 session. I think you guys went through such a thorough description of what it's like to be both as an entrepreneur and investors to be in this early stage ecosystem, especially in Southeast Asia. Now, that leads me to my last question that I always ask, which is what to expect from Startup O this year?
Oh, very high expectations, of course. we're very, very happy with something which was an idea or a vision which came out of the first principles or observations in the ecosystem itself has given rise to a very unique and innovative model of a platform fund approach. From its inception, it was authentic and original. It was not, coming from somebody's doing it and let's do it sort of a mode. Now, it has resonated very strongly with startups, with experts, investors, as well as with our partners. And this, I think, is going to really go on steroids this year. And we have started seeing some early signs with our partnerships going into Europe now. And we just signed some of the deals. So it's kind of resonating even in the global arena and have the potential to weave different siloed ecosystems to come together. Some of the numbers that are showing on the platform are very encouraging. In fact, some of the 70% of our finalist companies, top 60 last year, got funded from elsewhere, from different sources. Two of the companies in the portfolio raised follow-on rounds. Three companies doubled their run rate. One company got really recognized at the Harvard Business School level. Now, all these indicates to the fact that Startup.io is going to be, you know, going into even other areas. Nitin and I were discussing. Nitin, you want to say are the two areas that we're going to focus next year?
Yeah, I think, you know, another opportunity that is, you know, glaring at us in the face, which, you know, the platform wants us to address and which we plan to focus on in the coming year, is to marry the markets of Southeast Asia to the deep technologies that are being developed in countries like Singapore, Korea, and India. And, you know, we feel that the timing for such an initiative is, you know, optimal at the moment, because there's a lot of large local corporates in the region that are facing generational transition, and the incoming Generation 3, Generation 4 captains of industry are extremely keen on future-proofing their traditional businesses. So this is going to be an area of focus for us to be able to make sure that the collaboration point that Anuj was referring to earlier in the ecosystem is best optimized. And we feel the way we're going to do that is by marrying deep technology to large existing family-owned enterprises in the region.
This year, we are going to ramp up our venture building efforts with more and more EIRs who will get involved with our platform. The central focus on venture building is going to be one of the key milestones for us going forward.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. I'm really excited for what's coming ahead of you and Startup.io this year. I think that a lot of people needed something like this platform to get this, again, I mentioned, in a very early nascent phase of this ecosystem in Southeast Asia. So thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you, Anuj and Nitin.
Thank you very much, Danny.
Thank you very much.
Very kind.
Bye.